You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. I am Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSword.com. Joining me today, he is a Cavs reporter for Bleacher Report. It is Greg Schwartz. Greg, how are you?
Thanks for having me back.
We're going to get into a lot of things today. The one thing we will not be talking about is the LeBron Warrior stuff. I find that whole thing kind of nuts. I do not think it is worth us spending more than this last sentence on it. So we're done with it. Don't ask me about it unless... If this is July... Maybe, but we're done with it. So the big things we're going to talk about today, the trade deadline, Isaiah Thomas, Dan Gilbert, and Isaiah Thomas. But we're going to start with IT. If you follow Greg on Twitter, you know he's just looking at fake trades. But Greg, we're in a point where IT just played his first back-to-back. I think he's been booed several times now. It hasn't just been a one-time thing. What do you think is up with Isaiah Thomas right now?
I don't think he's anywhere close to 100% healthy. I think we can start right there. I mean, it's pretty noticeable even when he's leaving the court or entering the court. Like, he's still got a little hitch in his step. He is not 100% healthy. I thought it was interesting in a story the other night in the post-game, Jason Lloyd wrote that one of the Cavs trainers actually recommended that Isaiah Thomas not return until April, and that is far off from the original diagnosis that, yeah, we'll get him back from January. Then we heard, you know, maybe it'll be December. You know, it ended up being about a month ago. That's pretty telling. If you have somebody on the Cavs medical staff that doesn't think he should come back until 3 months after they actually put him out there, yeah, I think that says a lot. And, I mean, clearly he's not the same player. He's not getting to the rim like he was last year. I don't even want to talk about the defense right now, and he just isn't moving well on either side of the ball, and it makes you wonder, like, how good is that hip? Because originally he said, you know, it's going to be 15, 20 games. You know, the first couple games were fool's gold. Man, he just does not look like he has two healthy hips out there and can move anywhere close to where he was last year, and I think that's you're seeing the results of that in his stat line every night, and that's not good right now.
So if you're looking at his 15, if you're looking at the 15 to 20 game barometer when he said he expected to feel normal, he's played 12 games as of Thursday, 26.5 minutes a night. He's shooting 36.3% from the field. That's down a full 10% from last season. He's shooting 25% from three. That is down from 37.9% last year, so another huge drop. Only averaging 15.4 points per game, which would be his lowest total since he was in Phoenix, basically. And his numbers, to some degree, look sort of his Phoenix numbers were better, but like it's more like his Phoenix numbers than his Boston numbers. I will say that over the last two games, at least, the two things I think he's done well-ish is he's taking care of the ball a little bit better. And he's getting to the free throw line. So he's doing two things at least that you can say, okay, he's doing something right. But I think you're right. I think overall he's nothing exactly like he's been. And I think if that April thing is true, and like he and publicly no Cav has said that's the case, right? It is, and you have to trust Jason's reporting. He's detailed it as everyone out there knows. But if that April thing is real, that basically means he shouldn't have played this season. Or at the very least should have come back and maybe not been counted on. Like it should have been treated as a season-long injury. And I think at the very least, and I've said this already on Twitter, and I think you and I have maybe chatted about this, but I think he should have went to the G League. I think that is one thing I feel very confident in saying, that a G League rehab assignment would have done him a lot of good. I think hopping right back into things wasn't maybe the best thing for him coming off the way he did. And you know, I feel for the guy, honestly, like as someone he's going into this huge offseason where he hopes to get paid a lot of money for the first time in his NBA career, the last chance he really has to get a major contract, you would think, and it looks, and he's just playing far worse than he did last year. He's a completely different player.
Yeah, at this point, and who knows if he's going to even end the season with Cleveland. We don't know yet. he probably will, but let's say he does, let's say he doesn't. If he continues on this path or even gets marginally better, I think he signs a one-year deal and tries to get his stock up. I don't think he signs another deal like he did before, like a four-year, $27 million deal where he's just, you know, for the life of it, he's been vastly underpaid. I think he does one of those one-year deals where he's 28 now. He hits the market again in a year where he's 29. Presumably, he takes all of the summer just to work on the hip or rest or get whatever he needs to do that, and then tries to get another big deal the year after that. Because at this point, nobody's going to give him $20 million a year, $30 million a year, or whatever he was expecting. I think if he would have been a free agent last summer, and let's say he was healthy the whole year, if he was coming off that year where he had 28.9 points per game, was top five in MVP voting, second team All-NBA, I mean, he gets that Kyle Lowry contract, that 3 years, almost $100 million. Now, I have no idea what he would get. I really don't. I think that's the best thing. And, you know, it's obviously there's a lot of stuff that has to play out between now and free agency. But, I mean, you just look at these shooting percentages. You look at his defense. You look at his overall health. I don't see anybody even giving him a multi-year deal right now. And that's sad. I feel for him. But at the same time, he hasn't proven that. And, you know, certainly we got a couple more months to go, but it's not looking good for his Brinks truck dreams at this point.
So that I think that's a good time to move on to the Dan Gilbert IT relationship. Now, there's this Ken Berger story from earlier this week that we're not going to go into full detail on because it's been out there enough and hopefully you've read it by now. But the story, the two things I think that stand out most in the story is that we know now that Dan Gilbert in this Kobe Altman era is fully in control, where it seemed like in the David Griffin era, Griff had really established his own control. And we know part of the reason that relationship broke up was because of the David Griffin wanting that kind of absolute president title and all of that. That's why Trent Redden's now with the Clippers, right? Like that is part of the front office shakeup. Why there's a very new and raw front office staff in Cleveland right now. We also know that IT and Dan Gilbert have developed a relationship. And if you're IT, this is a good play. And Dan Gilbert's supposed that purportedly per Ken Berger, who you should trust. Like this isn't this is someone that who's like reporting. I think you should trust in. You're looking at IT, and he's apparently a favorite of Dan Gilbert. I don't think the numbers that we've gone into, and you can just look how he's playing, that justifies any team, be it the Cavs or some other team with cap space, to pay him a lot of money. But let's say he finishes the year strong. I mean, is it, Greg, I think if you're looking at the Cavs moving forward, is there a concern that IT, whether it's something LeBron indicates he wants, whether it's the right decision, whether there's an upgrade of that position available that they could go get in some other way, and it's too early to know who that could be. But is it concerning that the Cavs have this owner who likes to get involved, that has seemed to take a liking to this guy who's playing really bad right now, and is going to be looking for a lot of money this summer? That is another pivotal moment in franchise history, because LeBron James, and if he does what everyone expects him to and declines his player option, is going to be a free agent again.
I think the more involvement Dan Gilbert has with the Cavaliers besides signing checks, the worse off they are. And people will say, and this was great that I got on Twitter the other night. Somebody told me that Dan Gilbert brought a championship to Cleveland. No, Dan Gilbert did not bring a championship. He paid for a championship. He did not bring a championship. LeBron James and the rest of the Cavaliers players and coaching staff brought a championship. There's a lot of good owners out there, and most of them you don't know who they are if you're a casual fan. I feel like it's the owners that try to get a little bit too involved. It's the ones with the egos that think they can scout, they can make trades, they can run a front office.
Speaking of scouting, Dan Gilbert is personally scouting the Colin Sexton Trey Young matchup in Alabama with like five other Cavs staffers. Like that happened. Like that's a thing.
It was noted on the broadcast. He wasn't hiding. Like he was. I don't know if that was a statement to make it clear. Like, hey, I'm here. I'm scouting what, you know, we could potentially draft with this Nets pick. I wish Dan Gilbert and many other owners would hire the best possible people who are experts at their position and let them do their jobs. And I wish he would, you know, he has many ventures. He has many business ventures. And obviously he is very invested in Cleveland, but he's even more invested in Detroit. And I don't think that's any big secret. He just recently on his Twitter page called Detroit the most exciting city in America as he was campaigning for them to get the second Amazon headquarters. Is this a guy that's 100% invested in Cleveland? If he's so much invested in Detroit and trying to do this for Detroit, and the man probably owns half of Detroit at this point. And if he wants to do that, that's fine. That's great. That's up to him. But why does he think he can do that and determine how good these college players are? How can he run the front office, as was alluded to in the Ken Berger of Bleacher Report report that he put out? That's not good. None of these. If you trust Kobe Altman, and let's not pretend he didn't try to get Chauncey Billups first, and he did, and he tried to get him. It didn't work out. Just like he tried to get other GMs before ultimately giving David Griffin the position, he just needs to, I hate to say stay out of it because he owns the team, but he does. If you trust Kobe Altman, you gave him the job, let him do his job. Let your scouting department scout. Let your GM make trades. Don't get involved with it, because we've seen how well this played out. And any time Gilbert owned the team and LeBron wasn't there, I feel like the more involved Dan Gilbert is, the less involved LeBron James is going to want to be with the Cavaliers, and that's not a good sign moving into the summer.
I'd agree with that, and I think we're seeing the case made for having David Griffin kind of being the real architect of all of this. He has not really, you know, there are things I think you can critique Griffin. No GM is above that. No coach, no player is above being critiqued. I think that is something to always remember. But I also think you just see the at least he had the ability to do his what he felt was right. I think, you know, Gilbert's always kind of going to be there, but I think at least you had the trust in him. There was that trust in him to let him just do what he needed to do. I think that is something to do. I think Isaiah's free agency is going to be fascinating, this is going to be something I'm going to write. I don't know exactly when it will be up, so I'm not going to spoil my whole argument here, but I really think Isaiah Thomas right now and then in the summer is the Cavs' biggest X factor. This is a guy who he's the wild card is probably a better way to put it. This is a guy who, if he starts playing really, really well, it's going to be a big thing, because I have a hard time imagining they're going to trade him, and that's what we're going to get to next. But I have a hard time imagining they're going to trade him, and he's someone that he's what they do with him, with or without LeBron, will tell us a lot about what their plans are. Are they going to kind of just bring back the band? Or are they going to try to do something different if LeBron stays, or if LeBron leaves? Do they re-sign him and try to just be middle of the pack and settle into that reality of the NBA, which a lot of teams in the Cavs' market size try to do? It's what the Pistons are trying to do, frankly, with the Blake Griffin deal right now. It seems like Charlotte, you know, for example, is a team happy to be in that reality. With the Cavs, would they go all the way down or hope and give IT like a 3-year max and pair him with Kevin Love for the next couple of years? Is that something they would do? I don't know. But how these things work out around IT are, I think, going to be some of the most impactful things that happen with the Cavs between now and between when next season starts. And that's on, off the court. Every way you want to look at it, IT is going to be very, very important to what happens, whether he's good, bad, and depending on what kind of money he gets.
No, I completely agree. I mean, for all intents and purposes, he's the guy that has replaced Kyrie Irving. And, you know, Kyrie Irving was kind of that backbone where you said, okay, you know, if LeBron starts aging pretty soon and, you know, Kevin Love keeps racking up the injuries, at least we have Kyrie. He's not even in his prime yet. He's under contract the next couple years. Like, he was that backbone that you thought, okay, you know, if things go bad, at least we've got this next guy coming up. You don't have that right now. Luckily, LeBron James has had another monster season, and Kevin Love's going to be back, and he's been an all-star this year. But you don't have that insurance policy, and that's where you need Isaiah. You don't need Isaiah Thomas to be Kyrie Irving, but, oh, God, you need a lot more of Isaiah Thomas than you're getting right now. And obviously this season has to play out with how far they go in the playoffs and everything, but the intention, I'm sure, at the beginning was we're going to get Isaiah Thomas. He's going to come back in January. We're going to rehab him. We're going to make a long run in the playoffs. And then if all goes perfectly, you know, we might not give him a max contract, but he's going to get probably $20, $25 million a year. We're going to re-sign LeBron, and that's going to be our new big three. It's going to be Isaiah. It's going to be LeBron. It's going to be Kevin Love. I think that was the ideal plan moving forward, but with
post Paul George, at least I think like that. I think this was plan B to a degree.
Well, I'm saying after that trade.
Yeah, that's what I'm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah, after that trade was made, when Paul George wasn't going to happen, when the Pacers shot that down, and they went through this, like, it wasn't, oh, let's see what Isaiah Thomas gives us, and we'll probably trade him and try to upgrade. No, like, that was their solution, is we have Isaiah Thomas. Derrick Rose is going to be our Band-Aid until he comes back, and then, you know, we I would assume, want to sign Isaiah Thomas long-term, and that's going to be our new big three, and he's 28, Kevin Love's 29, LeBron's 30, was 32 at the time. Like, this is going to be the new big three, and I know you just said that you don't think they're going to trade Isaiah. I can't say that yet. I can't say that. I look at how terrible he is defensively, and I saw he had. I know defensive rating's not a great metric. There's no real great defensive metrics, but he has the worst defensive rating of any player in the last 25 years. That's that for a guy that was limited already with his height. And now he's limited with his mobility, and the team is limited because they can't put a lot of great individual defenders around him like Boston can. I'm scared, because what if you get the Wizards in round one and you say, okay, you got to go guard John Wall. Okay, we made it through that. Now we're playing the Raptors. You got to guard Kyle Lowry. Now we made it through that. You got to guard Kyrie Irving. And if you make it to the finals, oh, you have to guard Steph Curry. Man, that's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to try to mask that for him. There's so many teams you can't hide him on, and there's so many guys that are going to have to compensate for him. That's why I think I don't think you can write him in pen in being there after the trade deadline, or at least them not pursuing a point guard, because even if he returns a little bit better offensively and makes shots, defensively, look at those point guards you're going to have to go up against in the playoffs. That scares me a lot right now.
Is that the case for trading IT? Is it that you need that he's just that bad defensively, that he doesn't look right, that he doesn't help you right now? And I think that's a fair argument, but is that your argument for trading IT?
Well, my argument is you have two main goals. One, you want to win a championship. Two, you want to get LeBron to re-sign. And if this And I think Isaiah Thomas is going to get better as he goes along. It scares me that report came out that they thought he shouldn't be back till April. That scares me a little bit. But if you want to win a championship, can you win a championship with him as your point guard throughout these playoffs, knowing those matchups? Maybe. Maybe you can, because of all the talent you have around him. But if you can't, and you didn't do anything to upgrade the position, you didn't go out and get a Kemba Walker or somebody that's not only better at this point but is under contract for the next year, what does that say to LeBron? What package, what presentation do you take to him in the summer and say, this is why you re-sign? And if the best thing you can offer him is Kevin Love, who has had two major surgeries the last 2 years and is going to be 30 in the fall, and Isaiah Thomas, who, even if he returns to form offensively, is this terrible defensively, that's the best you can take to the table to LeBron this summer. I don't know that he can return to that. I don't know that he can return to that on a one-year deal, a five-year deal. I don't know. And I think that'd be tough to make that pitch with. So for that reason, I would still look at upgrading the point guard position.
All right, so just give me one example of something of how you would approach this. I don't we can't go down this full rabbit hole just because there's no information that we know of yet, or at least I haven't seen, that indicates of what an IT deal might look like. I think you're definitely including picks because he's such a low salary. To get an upgrade, you're definitely matching salary. What is something you would look at if you're Kobe Allman / Dan Gilbert? What are you doing to look at moving IT and trying to improve that point guard position right now? Is it Kemba Walker, or is it somebody else?
Kemba Walker makes sense because he is under contract for next year. So you don't go into free agency saying LeBron and Isaiah Thomas are both free agents. And, you know, LeBron, are you going to come back? Well, I'm only going to come back if Isaiah Thomas comes back. Isaiah, are you going to come back? Well, I'm going to, you know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't have to worry about that with a Kemba or somebody under contract who's younger, who's healthy, who's overall a better player at this point. You could point to him and say, look, we got, you know, he's 27 years old. He's under contract next year. He's only making $12 million. And we know he's available. And that's a big thing. Charlotte will trade him. I mean, Michael Jordan basically came out and said, yeah, we'll trade Kemba Walker. No uncertain terms, he said that. Now, if you want to get Kemba Walker, it's going to cost you the Nets pick. And I know Jordan said he wants an all-star in return. I don't know if Isaiah Thomas counts as that. He has been an all-star. He's not in an all-star form right now. But you would have to take back some bad contracts, I think. And Charlotte has a lot of bad contracts. But some of them I think you can use. I think you can use him, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, even though he can't shoot. He's 24. He's only making $13 million, and he could potentially guard a Kevin Durant for stretches in the finals. And Nicholas Batum has a terrible contract, but could he play? Yeah, he can play. He can give you 15-5-5 on any given night. I want no part of Dwight Howard, I'll say that. And they have Marvin Williams and some other bad contracts there. But I think that would be a start. You could say, you know, you can have Isaiah Thomas and, you know, maybe Michael Jordan sees something in him. And, you know, we'll give you an Amon Shumpert, somebody that could opt out of their contract. And even if he doesn't, only has 1 year left. So it's slightly a less financial move for you. And then you agree to take back a Batum or a Kidd-Gilchrist or something like that that make a lot of money. But at the same time, if you can get Kemba and you have that third star that is healthy and you don't have the uncertainty of Isaiah and how healthy is he going to be and how bad is he going to be defensively in the playoffs, I think that's a big selling point to LeBron in the summer, especially if he kind of creates that relationship with Kemba and he likes him, and all of a sudden Kemba's, you know, catch and shoot percentages go up because he has a better open look. I would rather go into free agency pitching LeBron James on returning with a 27-year-old Kemba Walker who's under contract than a 28-year-old Isaiah Thomas on a recovering hip who is a free agent. And if you got to take back some bad deals to do it, I would do it.
It gets tricky money-wise because if you send Shump and IT out with picks, whether it's your pick, the Nets pick, multiple future picks, whatever variation you want to look at, I think that money wise it gets tricky because it's $16 million. Kemba's at 12. So if you could, the money wise, Shumpert and Thomas plus picks for Gilchrist and Walker does not work. So, you know, this is, and it's not like $2 million we could throw Ante Zizic, the Canton yo yo in that deal and make it work, or Jose Calderon and make it work. It has to be Jay Crowder and above. So Crowder, Korver, Channing Frye on his expiring deal, and he's maybe hard to trade now because of the Kevin Love injury. J.R. Smith, Thompson, Love, and then LeBron. So that it's tricky money wise. I don't think you could take. I don't know if you could take back more than one of those contracts realistically, and feel good about it, or realistically do it. Because even if you do Frye, if you did Frye, if you put all the sort of the tradable things in your deal to do this, if it was Crowder and his cheap deal, Thomas, Frye, Shumpert to go, Kemba, Gilchrist, Batum. That doesn't even work because the Cavs still have to cut $8.8 million more from that trade. So that means Frye, it means Korver, who you're not trading, and then, you know, someone on the cheap. So that's tough. I think if you could do Kemba and then one of those two guys, whichever one you prefer, that's not a bad place. And I think if ideally you actually keep Crowder and you try to keep Fry, and I think you try to just use the picks to do it and try not to use the Nets pick, but maybe you have to. I think that's not a bad option. And Kemba's available, and he's, I think based on what we know as of right now, who's available and who's not available, unless, you know, CJ McCollum is miraculously available, and it doesn't seem, and there's no reason to believe that he is, Kemba's probably the top star player that's openly available right now, and maybe Marc Gasol is too, but I think considering age and all of that, maybe in the length of the contract and just for your future money, maybe Kemba's probably the safer bet in that regard.
Yeah, you say CJ McCollum.
CJ McCollum is on my list of people that I would probably give up the Nets pick for. I explained this on yesterday's pod, but I think when you look at where that pick is going to be, you're not banking on it being that. Historically, that pick does not typically come out to be a franchise altering guy. Great players get picked later on in the draft, right? Like in the later lottery. You can look at some of the examples of guys that are picked. But historically, it does not average out to be a all-time great NBA player. McCollum would be someone at his age and the contract he's on, you have him under team control. You could do him in love if LeBron decides to leave. If you could do that, that would be something that makes a lot of sense. And that requires, because he's making $23 million, that, you know, that's going to require a lot of things to be going out. You could do it actually with, I'm going to do this right now and just give you an idea, but, you know, you could actually do it. The money wise, it works with Shumpert, Thomas, Zizic, call the run actually works. To get McCollum back and make him your point guard. Portland, you'd have to give up all your picks basically to do that, and maybe Jetty has to be in there as well because he's the best young player the Cavs have. But I mean, that's the type of guy I give up the next pick for, and I don't think I'm not sure Kemba is. I think you'd have to really think about it. He probably is. I mean, I think if that's the best move you feel like you could do, like I'd rather have Kemba than George Hill. You know, I think, right. I think it's worth considering. I just think if you're another team, the reason I keep coming back to thinking their IT's probably going to be in the team, even if they think about trading him and shop him around, it's hard to trade for a guy that has looked like this without having to give up a lot more. And there's not a lot of situations that I think you look at and go, okay, this is maybe Charlotte's one, you know, maybe they're one, and maybe there's some other team out there that could get interested. Like maybe the Clippers, you know, in some sort of thing, and the Cavs decide to just go in all in LeBron playing point guard. Maybe that's something, right? But it's tricky to find that thing where I could see teams saying, okay, we can bet on IT. Maybe Charlotte's that because that what they're going for, but it's those situations are going to be few and far between in my mind.
All right, let me throw this at you. If we're talking just straight Charlotte and it's no other teams involved, and they said, we'll give you Kemba, and we'll take back Isaiah, and you have to take two bad contracts. So you have to take Nicholas Batum and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who I believe both those guys could play against the Warriors, which, you know, is, I'm not assuming we're going to be back in the finals, but at the end of the day, I still think we will. I don't want to assume it, but I still think they will. Both those guys you can play against Golden State because they can defend and they have length. You would have to send back Isaiah Thomas, who they might have some use for. I could see Michael Jordan putting a personal investment in him. Amon Shumpert, who is the player option for next year, will probably pick it up. And even if he does, it's, you know, there's a trade chip for you. Derrick Rose, who they would, I would assume, would just cut and save some money there. And then they have to take back one bad contract. They would have to take back, and I have J.R. Smith on here, who has this year, next year at $14.5 million about, and then the year after that is only partially guaranteed. So as bad as his deal is, it's getting a little bit better by the day when you consider that third year is only partially guaranteed. If you do that, you're about $7 million off, and that's with taking Batum, Kidd-Gilchrist.
So that's when Channing Frye becomes the move there. because he's making 7.4.
Korver or Crowder. I think you give up Korver.
I hate to give up
Crowder, and I hate to give up Fry too.
But you have to pick one.
I don't know. Right.
I think I would really push for the take the one. I think the Batum contract on your books is just not something you want. I think you could talk yourself into MKG, and honestly, if we're looking at guys coming from Charlotte, I almost wonder if you can construct. I'm going to construct this now. As we're doing this, this is what happens because the trade machine is addictive. But you could do IT and well, you can't even really do like Marvin Williams in there either. You have to kind of throw a lot of money in there. And the JR thing is interesting to think about, but it's tricky. And I think I would just go for one of them because I think you like Crowder. I think he's had some good moments of late. He's getting better. I think Fry you kind of have to keep now, and I feel really weird saying that because he is like that expiring you really could use to do a trade, but I almost wonder if you have to keep him now because of your forward. If it means playing Ante Zizic and not playing Ante Zizic, that's kind of what Fry represents right now. And I think with how good Jeff Green has been this year, Marvin Williams is really good, and those two of those guys would be nice, but I'm not sure if it's worth the extra $10 million from how Jeff Green's played this year. That's saying someone who has not watched a lot of Charlotte, but complicating your books in the future is not something I can see the Cavs doing. I think in a vacuum, it maybe can make sense, but I think it's also, it gets a little bit dicey. I think the one of the other things that could, I don't know how this would exactly work, but you do have you have the trade exception that you could use, that's $4.2 million, and that's not for anyone that's really on Charlotte's roster, the no one of note at least. No. But maybe if you want to send a bad contract somewhere or send, you get more comfortable with, maybe this is where you theoretically loop in Dallas as a third team and try to get Nerlens and use that trade exception to get Nerlens and bring him in at front court. And maybe that's where, Nerlens as his personality and what he does is from what we know of his personality, at least, is the opposite of what Channing is. That's certainly worth noting, but you could in a vacuum, send Rose and something and Fry out as well in this deal and do the trade exception, and then you could, in this three team deal that I don't have any reporting on or think is likely, you could come away with MKG, Kemba, Nerlens, and sending out Shump, who hasn't played recently, and that's a sign that they're trying to trade him, Thomas, Fry, and Rose, and with Dallas and Charlotte being the two teams, and I think you'd be better that way, even if you're losing Fry, that personality that everyone loves. That's tough to give up. And he's been so good for the team of late, but maybe they think about something like that. Even though MKG and Nerlens is two non-shooters, but Kemba certainly I think would be an upgrade over IT. Greg, aside from IT, what are you looking for at the trade deadline? We're less than a week away. The Nets pick is out there. We're seeing that it's about long-term value per Wendy more so than just not trading it. We expect, I think everyone and their mother expects them to make a move. What are you expecting at the deadline?
All signs point to them being reluctant to move the Brooklyn pick, and I don't view that as a gold mine. I view that as if you can get a really good player who is not going to be a free agent this summer, I think you make the move for it. And I don't know who that would be. I'd maintain the only player I would trade that Brooklyn pick for who has the potential to be a free agent this summer would have been Paul George. Just because the risk to the return of that, if you get him and he would have resigned long term, well worth it, obviously. And that probably would convince LeBron to stay as well. Now that we know that, Paul George probably ain't going to go anywhere, I think you look at guys that not only can help you win this year, but you got to look, and when you make that sales pitch to LeBron in the summer, I don't think you can just point to these quick fixes that they've done. And that's great that you have the ability to go out and, you can sign a Derrick Rose and a Jeff Green for these, and a Dwayne Wade for these minimum deals. because they're attracted to the star power that is LeBron James. But, you know, at some point these quick fixes wear off. And we saw that happen the first time LeBron was here. You know, Larry Hughes wasn't working, so we flipped him for Ben Wallace. And Ben Wallace wasn't working, and we flipped him for Shaquille O'Neal. And it was all these, like, and even Antoine Jameson, when he came over, was still a good player, but he was 33. And I think LeBron kind of saw the writing on the wall and said, well, you know, I'm entering my prime. This is the core that you're using to grow with me. I don't know about that. And I think you look at guys that not only are going to help you now, but could help you in the future. I would love to get, and maybe this is a Northeast Ohio bias, but if the Lakers are truly shopping Larry Nance Jr., like Woj reported they are, because they want a clear salary and they're looking at Julius Randle to move him, I'd love to get a guy like Larry Nance. And maybe that doesn't greatly improve you. Maybe that's not a blockbuster deal. But at some point, you got to get a little bit younger. You got to get a little bit more athletic. You got to get guys that LeBron looks around and goes, dang, like I could spend the next 5 years with this guy. If I'm going to play 4 or 5 more years, yeah, I'd like to play with this guy. That are under team control too. If that's a Rodney Hood from Utah, that's a Larry Nance Jr., if that's, you know, dream scenario CJ McCollum, who's under contract for the next 3 years at, you know, a reasonable $24 to $26 million a year. Ideally, I think that's what the best thing you can do, and you don't just go for the quick fixes and you know, even like a George Hill. That's a nice fit, but he's, you know, he's 31 and he's on the downside of his career. If you can get anybody, and you have the Nets pick, so you can make some moves for people, you do that. And I would like to see them make a trade where they trade out more players than they're receiving and open up a couple roster spots. Because we already saw Greg Monroe get bought out. Greg Monroe is not going to come to the Cavs. But Brooke Lopez the other night in Los Angeles, barely playing, very frustrated, probably going to get bought out at some point because he makes so much money and teams aren't going to want to send that much salary back, and the Lakers don't want to take on any salary. You look at Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for the Lakers. Again, big contract, probably not in the team's long-term plans. Is that a buyout candidate? You talked about trading for Nerlens. If Dallas can't find a deal that they like there, I don't think he's got a future in Dallas with how bad his season's been there. Is he a buyout candidate? So if you can make a move, too, where you free up a roster spot or two because you don't have any right now and you don't want to cut guys because that's still going to cost you the luxury tax, that would be big, too, because you could potentially have some real big names on the buyout market and for next to nothing. I think that would go a long way in helping the team as well.
I think you're right about that. I like the idea of kind of getting things that would maybe help now but also could help you in the future. Like if it's Larry Nance, you know, he could be someone that you say, okay, this guy's part of our young core with Jetty and the pick, and that's our rebuild to some degree. And that's too far ahead, but it's going to be interesting. Greg, we'll wrap it up on this. Cavs right now playing the Rockets on Saturday. A whole lot going on with this team. They've altered in between looking a little bit more competent and then, you know, losing to a Pistons team that was missing a lot of players. Big part in large reason because Isaiah didn't play one and Kevin Love breaks his hand. Right now, Cavs are third in the East. Where is this team at right now? Like, when you think of the current state of the Cavs, how do you kind of evaluate what they're doing right now? Is this the low point that we've seen so far this season, or is it maybe a little bit better than some might think?
You know, you and I cover the team, and I like to think we do a good job, but
I'm okay. I'm eh. You're pretty good. I'm pretty bad.
We're average. We're hoping to become above average at some point. You know, I pay attention to a lot of the beat guys, the guys that are with them every home game, every away game, every practice. And you know, I'm a good follower of David or Jason Lloyd. And when he, you know, for a while he kept saying, "Oh, this is another January. This is we've seen this before." And I forget what game it was, and maybe it was after the Monday team meeting where everybody's pointing fingers. He wrote that the Cavs were officially broken. And that, to me, signified, yeah, we definitely need some changes. I think this is a team that is desperate to make a move at the trade deadline, and it can't just be, hey, we got George Hill, everything's fine. That's not good enough. This team will be better when the playoffs start. LeBron has been abysmal defensively on some nights with his efforts, and we know that'll obviously change in the playoffs. But you don't see a lot of joy from the guys. You have Kevin Love out now for possibly 2 months. You have Isaiah Thomas that let's be honest, you don't know what he's going to be. We don't know. This is a team just screaming for trade deadline help. And if they sit on their trade assets, if they sit on that Brooklyn pick, if Dan Gilbert loves his college scouting and says, boy, I really want to get that Trae Young. Have no idea if I'm going to get him, if the pick's going to be there, if he's going to be, I really want to get him. And they sit on the Nets pick when they have a chance to acquire a Kemba Walker or a C.J. McCollum or somebody like this, and they just end up with like a George Hill. I think that's going to be the end of LeBron in Cleveland. I think you have to make your statement now. You have to say, we are willing to go out, get you the help to shake up this roster, and to give you some pieces that you can grow, that can grow around you for the next couple of years. And if you don't do that, I don't even know if they make the finals, because that's how bad this team is right now. As Lloyd said, this team is officially broken. Things are not good. And you always had Kyrie to bail you out. You don't have Kyrie anymore. You don't have Love for the next 2 months. This is a team screaming to make some trade deadline moves. And I hope they're not stubborn with it. I hope they, if it's the right deal, I hope they use the assets that they have, because they need help right now. They need help in a lot of different areas. And I hope Gilbert lets Kobe Altman do his job and doesn't try to get too involved. And I think this team hopefully will look pretty different on February 9th.
It's going to be interesting. We'll have Greg back on afterwards to break it all down, I am sure. But it's going to be fascinating. I think just the thing. Only thing I can add to that is, having been in locker rooms recently when Isaiah has talked, there's frustration there. And I don't know it as well as Lloyd, yeah, or Varden or McMenamin, but it's palpable. And when Channing played as well as he did the other day, you could see how much better it seemed to make people feel. And we'll leave it at that. Find Greg on Twitter at CavsGregBR. Find me on Twitter at CDBamWrites. Greg, thanks so much for coming on the pod.
Yeah, thank you.
And everyone, we'll be back Sunday morning. Cavs Rockets recap. We'll see how that goes. I'm not expecting a lot of good things for the Cavs in that game, but we'll see how it goes. Maybe they'll rise to the occasion. But we'll talk then, and have a great start to your weekend.